welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we're doing on Thursday morning. Joining us from Philadelphia, where he was at the Nets 76ers game on Wednesday night and is flying later today to Boston to go to Celtics Knicks on Thursday night, is Tim Bontemps.
Hello, guys.
Joining us from Dallas, Texas, Band McMahon.
Howdy, partners. Be making my maiden voyage to Salt Lake City tonight. See those little scrappy Jazzies this weekend?
Well, the Jazzies, as you call them, gave up 60 last night to Damian Lillard in Portland.
Not for the first time that they've given up at least 60 or at least 50 to him. But those things happen sometimes.
Well, the Jazz are very comfortably, because nobody's given them any flack about it, very comfortably now down in 10th and headed the direction they wanted to head. And I think when we get to the end, they'll be right where they need to be. So that's my prediction.
So will the Indiana Pacers, by the way.
That's true. Although the Pacers did get a win a couple days ago against the Bulls to break their losing streak.
They have a worse record now than Utah, even with that. And with Tyrese Haliburton out, they are trending very sharply in the downward direction.
We're going to talk about the Pacers. We're actually going to talk about the Pacers in a few minutes.
We are.
In relation to what their current position may be doing to their intentions at the deadline. Bontemps, this game you were at, no Kevin Durant, but still a very spirited game, a very trash talk filled game that spilled over into the post game with Durant and Embiid, tweeting at each other, total wrestling type affair, complete with, Embiid doing the Triple H chop. I don't know. I'm not a wrestling guy. I don't know what that, what's that thing where you do the cross and hit your crotch. What's that called?
It's from the Degeneration X suck it sign, I believe.
Ooh, it's a Disney podcast, sir.
I'm just saying what it's called.
What Degeneration X? What is that?
It's the tag team with Triple H and Shawn Michaels, which Embiid has talked many times about being his favorite wrestling.
Yeah, well, he operates a bit from the wrestling field. So, but what was it?
Not just a crotch chop, but it's like a hip thrust into the crotch chop. I mean, there was a lot going on there.
Well, the thing was, and maybe he's posted this before, but, you know, like 10 minutes after the game.
Oh, it was a lot more than 10 minutes after the game, because there was a phalanx of people helping him construct the post to put up after Kevin tweeted
but,
at him.
But I'm saying is like,
I gotta look up that word.
He had this
an army, McMahon.
He had this video ready. Like, I don't know if he's used that video before, but does he just have this video edit of him?
Like I said, it wasn't 10 minutes after the game, because we had to wait a good while to talk to him because there was some preparations being done, I think.
I always thought phalanx was a body part, which it actually is as well. I was not aware of the
military
reference. Yes.
There you go.
No. Yeah. I could have gone to military school, but I chose the other route. Got shipped off to Maine instead of Kansas. Those are my options, though.
Did they really give you a choice?
Yeah, Pops gave me a choice. It was military school in Kansas or a character development school in Maine. And obviously, I developed some character.
Real to character development for sure.
Bontemps is annoyed this morning. I'm not sure. I know he's annoyed at me, but I'm not sure why.
Oh, he's grumpy.
I'm not annoyed. I'm not annoyed at all.
Yes, you are. You heard the little whining. You heard the whine. He took a long time to come to the press interview room. We were just waiting there.
Well, no, listen, I had a lovely chat with the big fella last night, per usual. He was in a great mood, and I had a great time. Last night's game was fantastic. I mean, the best part about this game was afterward. Yeah, James Harden and Joel Embiid try to claim it's just a regular game. The day before, you had Kevin Durant say there's no such thing as rivalries in the NBA. Meanwhile, Kevin is tweeting during the game about how he misses trash talking Joel. He's then saying his celebration was trash on Twitter, which led to Joel then doing all this nonsense with the video after the game. There were like six technicals called on individual players during the game, and or individuals, including Jack Vaughn, who got one like 2 minutes into the game. 60 seconds into the game, Embiid is trying to put Ben Simmons into the stanchion. He's claiming that there was no intent with that, which is nonsense. it was awesome. Like, it was an awesome, the crowd was jacked up for the game. The players were jacked up for the game. It felt like a game that was in mid-May. It did not feel like a game that was in mid-January. You know, there's some tactical stuff I think we can get into from the game too, but the biggest thing I took away from it was it was fun to be at a game where there was real energy and emotion on both sides, and everybody really wanted to win the game. And I sure as hell hope this is a 7-game series this spring, because it would be awesome. It would be so great.
The crowd was all over Simmons, but I don't know if I want to say that it was good natured, but it was just,
there was nothing bad at all. No,
well, there was no batteries got hurled. So that was, I mean, I think that qualifies as good.
It was nowhere even as, it was nowhere near as much as the game last year in March, the first, even when he didn't play the first game back. It was just a normal back and forth. I mean, what got the crowd amped up was Embiid going at Simmons in the post, which is what everybody had been waiting to see. And, you know, even though Embiid didn't score on any of them, it wasn't, nobody was too interested in the outcome.
Well, it wasn't the greatest game for Embiid. You know, he missed 12 shots in this game, but here's what I find amazing. He missed 12 shots, which happens, not the end of the world. The Nets as a team, I believe, I believe the Nets missed a total of 27 shots. They shot 65% in this game. Talk and about
54 from it three.
It was a defense optional game for large.
Talk stretches. About a perfect example of the modern NBA. They shoot 65% on the road, which is like weighted like 70% basically, and they lose 65% for the game, and they lose. And then Philly goes 35 of 36 at the line. Mm-hmm. And Embiid went 13 of 13, which is how he was able to get his points up despite only going 6 of 18 from the field. Mm-hmm. Very, that doesn't feel like a May game, somebody shooting 65%, but
yeah,
it definitely made it for interesting to watch.
Yeah, the defense wasn't great on either side, you know. And I thought, obviously, with Kevin Durant not playing, certainly a huge piece missing in the game. But to me, if these teams match up in the spring, I do think Philly would be favored for me to win. And I think you saw in this game why that would be the case. Like, I know Embiid didn't have a great shooting game, but they had no answer for him inside. He got four. They had to foul left and right all game because they didn't have the size to really go up against Philly in the paint.
No, here he goes. I mean, bad mouthing Claxton again, like he has been all season long.
I have not been bad mouthing Nick Claxton. He played great last night, but he also was not
all defensive candidate. And Bob Nick Kim Claxton, says he can't guard.
Well, was Nick Claxton one-on-one guarding Joel Embiid most of the game? No.
He did get bumped from basically one block to the other late in the game when the big fella faced up instead of go to the hoop.
The smart thing they did was basically anybody else bodying up Embiid, and then they would have Claxton come over and help, which was pretty effective. And Claxton played really well last night. Thing that was really interesting about Claxton is the key question with the Nets going forward, I think, is assuming everybody's healthy, what are they going to do down the stretches of games with Ben Simmons? I think what you saw last night is what's going to happen, which is Ben Simmons is not going to play. He left the game with 9 minutes to go. They were down 14. Nets went on a huge run, came back into the game, made it close down the stretch. I mean, you know, Simmons was more aggressive in the third quarter. He scored, I think, all 12 of his points or 10 of his 12 points in the third quarter. He didn't score in the first half. At this point, I'm not sure Ben Simmons is better than Bruce Brown. And I don't think that he is a guy that, with his lack of shooting and his lack of complete aggressiveness, really, at basically all times on offense, you can't have him and Nick Claxton out there down the stretch of games with zero shooting and two guys that can't hit a foul shot most of the time playing together. And as McMahon said, if you look at the over the course of the season, you go back to October, it was all right. The Nets are going to have Ben Simmons out there playing center and they'll have shooting around him and he can orchestrate the offense. Nick Claxton probably won't play. Nick Claxton's been really good. He's going to have to play. I think you're going to see a lot of nights like what you saw last night, where when you get down to clutch time, Ben's going to be watching, you know, Nick Claxton surrounded by shooting.
Well, and Claxton's a much more impactful defender.
Way more.
Which is surprising. I didn't expect that. By the way, he was 11 of 12 at the line last or over from the field last night.
Yeah.
Pushing him to 74% for the season. 74%. I know he's not shooting Durant volume, but I mean, hey, that's good in any man. League.
That's right. 74%
from the floor and 46% from the line.
I know.
Yeah, the free throw thing, like Shaq. The free throw thing with him is going to be a problem. That's tough.
But yeah, he is
in a playoff setting, they're going to hack him and they're going to hack Simmons, and it's going to be difficult for Jock Vaughn to figure out lineups defensively that are going to work. I mean, that's pretty clear. The other thing is they've lost 5 out of 7 since Durant went down. The games that they won took Kyrie playing other, you know, full power Kyrie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So they're going to still take some. No, they're not. I don't think they're really in danger of falling out of the top six. But if Durant is out, you know, they are in danger of losing position.
Well, listen, here's the difference. They had a chance to be in the top two, which meant
they were in the top two.
Well, no, but I'm saying they had a chance to stay in the top two, and then you're not playing a Milwaukee or a Cleveland or a Philadelphia in the first round. You're playing somebody like the Knicks or the Hawks or the Bulls or whatever. Pick your lower level Eastern Conference team that they're probably going to beat, and you know, it's one easier round in the playoffs. Instead, now, if you got to play, say, Milwaukee, Philly, and Boston to get out of the East, that's a heck of a lot harder road. That's where I think these games really matter. I don't think they're falling lower than fifth unless Durant ends up missing a ton of time. But
well, you went to Durant's press conference in Brooklyn. Was it Tuesday?
Yeah, Tuesday afternoon.
And it sounds like they didn't articulate this, but it sounds like he's not coming back till after the All-Star break.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Key got asked directly if he wants to play in the All-Star game, if he'd rather wait till after the break. Naturally, he said he wants to play tomorrow, but he said, look, I'm going to do what the doctors say is the right thing to do. I mean, he's going to get reevaluated like a week before the All-Star game. I guess he can maybe come back for a couple of those games. I think logically it makes sense to have him just sit for another month and just have him come back ready for the stretch run. He was already probably playing too many minutes and he'd only missed one game before the break. So that's probably what I would do, but you know, we'll see what happens. So maybe might depend on if they lose another 5 games in a row and they're really scuffling. Maybe he'll try to come back for the last couple.
Yeah, I think it's the right decision. I'm just talking about where they are, you know, what it'll cost them in the stand.
For sure.
Also yesterday, Chris Haynes from the Bleacher Report had an interview or a brief interview with Kyrie Irving's agent, who is also his stepmother. And I want to exactly quote Shetelia Irving exactly what Chris quoted her as saying. And she said, I have reached out to the Nets regarding a contract extension. We have no significant conversations to date. The desire is to make Brooklyn home with the right type of extension, which means the ball is in the Nets court to communicate how they're now, if their desire is the same.
Mm. It's been a while since we've had some drama. So
Kyrie has been on his best behavior ever since returning from the suspension.
Yeah, I mean, he did get suspended.
Yeah. And now the team is actually struggling, and I don't know about the timing of this. We all knew that this was going to be there. You know, the one thing that I immediately started thinking about, she said something else. I wanted to go further on that quote. She said that, or no, actually she didn't say it, but Chris implied that there would be a number of teams interested in him if he became an unrestricted free agent this summer. And that's where this conversation, I think, has a diversion. I'm not sure how many teams would be interested in him this summer.
Did the Lakers just do something to chew up some cap space, probably?
Well, we're going to talk about that. But I don't, my advice to Kyrie Irving, he has 0% interest in my advice. That's been established for a decade, is I would not make the contract and issue one iota during this season. Yeah. And I would not expect the Nets under just about any circumstances to give him an extension during the season, even if it is a short extension, which I'm sure he doesn't want. I'm sure he wants a long extension, because that was the issue last summer, was there was some contract talks. The Nets made an offer. I don't know what that offer was, but the offer was not to Kyrie's liking, to the point where he asked for permission to go find a trade, which he was unable to do. But I would just say to him that it is advisable to continue to perform on the court and not cause off the court distractions, which this potentially could be. And I also don't think that there are going to be a ton of suitors who have cap space. You can, and I mean, this happens routinely in the NBA. A team raises its hand, oh yeah, we'll pay, and you don't have cap space. Well, if you don't have cap space, it doesn't really matter, because the Nets don't have to cooperate. I mean, well, ultimately,
unless you're Leon Rose and can dump a couple guys on Detroit and sign Jalen Brunson without giving up anything with second rounders.
Well, I will say that part of the Mavericks' miscalculation with Jalen Brunson was believing that the Nets or that the Knicks couldn't clear the cap space without help from them.
Yes.
And they did. And that was a miscalculation. And well, the Knicks, the Mavericks were like, yeah, we'll trade you Jalen Brunson and we're going to ask for a certain price. And the Knicks said no. And the price that they paid for, you know, allegedly tampering, which I think is laughable, was a second round pick.
So another second rounder. Oh, shucks.
Yeah. So anyway,
the Mavs have that non-tax or the taxpayer rather, taxpayer mid-level burning a hole in their pocket. I do think I'll say this. I've got my concerns about signing Kyrie, but I think it would be a better taxpayer mid-level addition than JaVale McGee has been.
Yeah. Well,
then DNC, then DNPCD, JaVale McGee with two.
Did you see the video that circulated of Luka's face with JaVale hyping the team?
Yes, I sent it to you.
I was going to say, McMahon sent it to us, pal.
That's right.
I saw it. I got a good laugh about it. That's for sure.
Well, look it up. I don't think that. I think obviously Kyrie would find a home next year. I just don't think that it would be simple. And so I found that story interesting. And
well, if I were Kyrie, simple and max is the other question. And honestly, a lot of that might depend on, hey, does Philly make a deep run? And does Harden look at this and be like, why would I consider leaving a legitimate contender to go back to Houston? If he does, I mean, I'm telling you, Houston's going to try to make a big splash this summer. Tillman Fertitta did not sign up for a fourth year of cellar dwelling.
Well,
I'm not telling you what's a good idea and what's not. I'm just telling you what is.
It also depends on where Houston is in the draft order. If Houston can draft Scoot Henderson, are they signing James Harden or Kyrie Irving?
That's a good question. That's a good question.
If they could draft Victor Wembanyama, you know, that's another conversation, but.
Hey, Victor, come on over to the NBA. By the way, here's Kyrie for you to team up with. Welcome to the NBA.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. That is going to be an interesting one. But speaking of the transactions, I talked a little bit with Mark Spears on the last pod about the Lakers. We only got into it briefly. Bontemps, what did you make of Rob Pelinka's comments after the trade where he reaffirmed that they're only going to move those future picks for a star player, but did openly say that he didn't think that they were done and that they still wanted to make maneuvers with this team, because the people have been so focused on the Lakers doing something right now in the, you know, in the next 6 seconds to turn them into a guaranteed championship contender that they haven't thought about what I've been talking about for months now, which is this summer. The decision on Hachimura affects the summer, and what Rob Pelinka was implying potentially affects the summer. To me, that is as much interesting of this trade, other than the fact of the Lakers adding a rotation player, a non-difference-making rotation player in the first trade of trade season.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of discussion you know, understandably, because there have been many trades, right, about what Rui Hachimura means to the Lakers rotation. Like, oh, you know, he's going to do this or that. He could be a wing defender, blah, blah, blah. To me, like you said, the far more interesting dynamic is what McMahon referenced earlier, which is by making this trade and signaling that they're going to extend Rui, which when you trade for a guy in the final year of his rookie deal off a first round pick contract, he's going to be an RFA. You're going to plan on extending him, especially if you trade a decent second round pick for him. That means the Lakers eat into their cap space this summer. And they really don't have a way with AD and LeBron making a ton of money, if they start to eat into that cap space, to have the ability to go after a Kyrie Irving or some other big name player, if they're going to be a free agent. And their whole team around those guys are unrestricted free agents, so they don't even really have the money to send out in some kind of a trade to bring in players if they want to, you know, re-sign Rui Hachimura and then use other guys and sign a trade or something. It's going to be very difficult for them to try to do something like that. So to me, the thing that was significant about this trade is that I would now expect between now and the trade deadline for the Lakers to take on a pretty significant amount of money or guys or significant guys that they can re-sign the contracts this summer now, because it would seem that, to your point, the path to adding to the team in July has shrunk quite a bit with this move. So if you're not going to do it in July, you might as well do it now.
You're speaking as if there's a well-formed plan.
Well, that's fair. That's a fair criticism. It is the Lakers. I would say to me, it's like the Lakers have won 6 or 7 out of 10. They've got AD back. It's like, hey, the West, we're 2 games out of 5th in the West. We're going to make a run. That's what the plan seems like to me, looking at it. I don't know if I agree with that plan, but that's what it seems like.
I actually like this move, and I like this approach much better than, hey, let's go get another max star and have, you know, nothing but firewood around them, basically. To me, this is the exact kind of move the Lakers needed to be making. They didn't give up a guy who's contributing now. Now, you know, we can talk about the value of second round picks. It's whatever. They went out, they got a guy who they plug into the rotation, is going to play 25, 30 minutes per night, has some upside. They think he has some untapped potential. You know, they very well could be right there. And then is going to be part of this thing, you know, could be part of this thing for 4 or 5 years or beyond. It's not just some kind of desperation, let's chase a play-in spot right now move. And they didn't give up their 2 big bullets. So I like this move. And then if they are, you know, if they're operating going in the trade deadline, like, they're not going to get another major star, right? There's not going to be a reason. Probably not.
I mean, that's not the way the Lakers think. The Lakers think that there's always a guy who wants to be a Laker who can get his way to LA.
But they're probably not going to have good enough reason to give up 27 or 29, those picks. And so then you go and, you know, Pat Beverly's an expiring contract. And, you know, if there's a quality rotation player you can get for him, then you take back the money. You know, maybe there is some kind of thing where a team's looking to get off a contract for a guy who can contribute to the Lakers. So I actually like the Rui deal for them.
I think the Rui deal's whatever. I don't think it's terrible by any means. It's fine. I just think, to me, it's more about what it signals going forward. And like Brian mentioned it earlier, with Indiana falling off a cliff.
Yeah, let's talk about
that. With Tyrese Halliburton going to be out seemingly for a while, that opens up a question. Do the Pacers, who 2 weeks ago, I mean, I was at MSG when Tyrese got hurt, they were in the top 6 in the East. I'm sure they were not going to blow up that team. That would be the opposite of what Herb Simon has always wanted to do, the owner of the team. And they've got him and Ben Mathurin playing great, young backcourt of the future. But now they're already down to 10th. They're probably going to keep going down the standings. Do they decide to trade Buddy Hield and Miles Turner? And that brings us back to the trade that's been talked about for 6 months. You know, does something happen there?
Right. Well, that's Westbrook. And you know, Indiana is going to want first round pick compensation for that type of trade. Mm-hmm. And in that type of move, you're committing yourself. They, you know, they've negotiated with Miles Turner about an extension, haven't come to terms on it yet. Doesn't mean that they won't, but they haven't. And they are a cap space team this summer. Not that I think Indiana is I don't think they should be operating in free agency. They tried to do it with DeAndre Ayton and it didn't work out.
That's not an attractive market. Is that what you're saying?
DeAndre Ayton signed a offer sheet, but I think I don't think it's a good, I don't think saving cap space is a functional way for them. I think there's other ways to use their resources. But that, you know, Buddy Hield is one of the best 3-point shooters in the league. And, but his contract has got a couple of years on it. So in that trade, that would, you know, if you traded Westbrook for those types of guys, it would get the Pacers cap space, which they do not need. So,
well, the Pacers are going to have cap. I mean, the Pacers that currently have 30 million caps or whatever.
Exactly.
They have cap space now.
They don't need 30 million to start with. That doesn't really help them. They sure as heck don't need more. So the only way they're doing this deal is for significant draft compensation. And I'm not sure if there's any players on the Lakers roster that they could include that would materially change that. They may ask for Austin Reeves or something like that, Max Christie, but that's not changing their ask. So, you know, Pelinka is on the record again saying that they would look at trading those picks if they can move them to a championship. And I'm telling you that is where they are right now, assuming AD is able to stay healthy. If they got Buddy Hield and Miles Turner on this roster for Russell Westbrook, they would be a playoff team and they would be a tough out. I do not think they would rise to the level of championship team. Do you think that's,
I mean, the West stinks. So saying they're a playoff team, I think that's certainly fair if they make that trade. It's not
a playoff team now. I mean, to be honest.
Right now there's what, four teams in the West that are over 500?
I think there's more than that, but not by much.
Well, now there's Now there's a couple teams that won the last couple of days. So yeah, there's now a whopping seven.
Right. But you're talking about two that are a game over 500, two games over, three games over. It's not a bunch of, as Spencer Dinwiddie said about the Washington Wizards after the Mavs lost to them, not like there's a bunch of stalwarts over there.
Right. Yeah. Like Phoenix and the Clippers have each won a couple games recently, so they pushed it back up. But the bottom line is the West is no murderer's row. It's not what it's been over the past couple decades. So yeah, like, look, the Lakers are two losses out of fifth place right now, and they're three losses out of fourth place. It doesn't shock me that they look at this and say, we got AD back. He had 21 last night. You know, I agree with you, McMahon. Like, Rui's a fine swing for them, whatever. But like, if you got Russell Westbrook on the team and you're not going to have cap space this summer or significant cap space, it doesn't make sense to have him on the team in 2 weeks. They should at minimum do with the reverse of what they did, if they can, with the Washington trade, to try to turn him into more players they can have on their roster.
Which is what Turner and Hield would be. But my question is, Pelinka is multiple times on the record saying only if it makes us a championship contender. And I'm not sure Hield and Turner do that.
No, they don't. They don't.
Well, and there's no moves that make them a championship contender that realistically are on the board. But if the only move they make is to let's say this is the one move they make. Let's say they traded for Rui and that's the only move they make. I think that's worse than doing nothing, because it makes it, while I don't disagree with your point, McMahon, that they have no depth. And if they had a third high price player, they would have three high price players and no depth. Mm-hmm. Now they're going to have either the same roster they have by just re-signing the guys they have that aren't very good, because they haven't been very good this year, or they're going to maybe add one mid-price player to go with Rui Hachimura, and that's just not going to move the needle either. Whereas if they'd done nothing, at least they had the option to add a significant player.
Let me add one more thing. If, like, all of a sudden Kyrie Irving wants to be a Laker and the Lakers decide they want to sign him, they could just renounce Rui Hachimura and say goodbye, and they would have just rented him for 3 second round picks.
Which would also be a very bad decision for a team that has few assets. That's what I mean. Like, if this is the only move they make, it doesn't make sense.
Well, I'm just saying, like, again, is there a plan? I mean, is there a plan?
That's, given it's the Lakers, it's a very fair question.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live.
Look, so, to your point, if they do add some pieces, the West is wide open. Like, they could get up into the top 6 or 7, potentially. Fady stays healthy, you know, could be a better season. It could be a much better season than I certainly thought it was going to be, because the conference has come back to them.
That's one way to look at it. But let's just say that this is their team. And do you like them in a playoff series against the Clippers? The Clippers have beaten them 10 times in a row.
No,
I do not. You like them in a playoff series against the Warriors?
No.
Do you like them in a playoff series against the Grizzlies?
No.
You like them in a playoff series against the Suns?
No.
Well, you like them in a playoff series?
Maybe the Suns. Maybe the Suns.
Do you like them in a playoff series? The Suns haven't been great. Do you like them in a playoff series against the Mavericks?
I like anybody in a playoff series against the Mavericks. Yeah, I mean,
Dallas, maybe.
Okay,
the Mavs got some fixing to do themselves for sure. But you didn't mention the Nuggets. The answer is hell no.
Oh, I didn't mention the Nuggets. Yeah, that could be who they play
because you hate Jokic. But
yeah, I'm not saying they're going to. I don't think they're top. I don't think if this is their team, I don't think they're winning. To be clear, I don't think they're winning two playoff series or one playoff series even. But I think they can make the playoffs. Which
would be great with this roster. Honestly, it would be a good season. All right. Speaking of the Grizzlies, they lost in Golden State last night in a strange game. Everyone was talking about Steph getting ejected with a minute to play. Steph had a great game. Steph has been ejected before for throwing his mouth.
He sure has.
But not because of a teammate's terrible shot selection.
That was wild.
How about Jordan Poole going from taking a shot so terrible that Steph got ejected for it to cutting back door to get the game-winning layup?
By the way, did you see how he celebrated with Steph after the game?
Yeah, through his mouthpiece.
So for fans that didn't see, there's at Chase Center, there's like a big long hallway going back to Golden State's locker room, and Steph was waiting for the team to come in. Jordan Poole starts walking towards him and takes his mouthpiece out and whips it against the wall between them. They started laughing, which I thought was pretty funny.
When Jordan Poole's doing the walk-off interview with Roz, do you think he really didn't know that Steph got tossed because of his shot selection or because of his reaction to Jordan Poole's shot selection? Or do you think he was just trying to pretend to be oblivious?
Yeah. So in the post-game interview, he did with Roz Gold on Wu Day, it made it sound like he didn't know why Steph had thrown his mouthpiece.
I mean, he might not have at the time. I didn't find out about this any of this till later. I was actually leaving the game with Friedel last night, and I got the alert that Jordan Poole hits a game winning layup and the Warriors win. I was like, oh, okay, I watched that play. I was like, all right, it's interesting. And then I woke up this morning and I started catching up. I was like, holy cow, this is a wild sequence.
Also, like the ref, come on, man. Like, dude, don't
I'm not doing that. Like, it's a very clear rule. You can't You can't whip your mouthpiece. Like, you can't, you just can't do
There's
that.
There's been a number of guys thrown out this year automatically because they
throw something. Yeah, it's not, I'm not trying to, I don't want Steph to get thrown out of the game with a minute to go either, but like, just don't spike your mouthpiece into the crowd or into the stands or whatever. Like, you can't do that.
Well, then pass him the ball.
That, of course, happened in game six of the game was already decided. It happened in game six of the 2016 finals. Steph
sure
was having a miserable game. Well, he might have been about to foul out. But he threw his mouthpiece and he got ejected. So, but yeah, Jordan Poole took a 28 footer with 12 seconds left on the shot clock with Steph standing 5 feet to his left, asking for the ball.
Clapping for the ball. Yes, not just asking.
Demanding the ball.
Yes.
In a night when he was having a good night, which, by the way, I don't know if it would have mattered, but one of the things that happened in this game, so Steven Adams is out for a month with an injury. And Jaren Jackson Jr., who I would hope, knowing that Steven Adams is out for a month, would maybe get him to try to reduce his fouls, because it's Grizzlies don't have many weaknesses. They got a lot going for them, but Jaren Jackson's leading the league in blocks, but he is leading the league in fouls. He just fouls and
his minutes are only in the mid 20s, and those two things are directly related.
Well, yes and no. I think his fouling is a huge problem. Chris Harrington, our guy from the Daily Memphian, he did a big thing. I was reading about it this morning. He did a big breakdown of Jaren's minutes and fouls. And his contention, which I tend to agree with, is Memphis is very conservative with minutes. They play a heavy rotation. They play a bunch of guys. I'm not sure Jaren Jackson will be playing more minutes right now, whether he was averaging 3 fouls a game or 5 fouls a game. I think he'd probably still be in the
play more last night.
Well, my point, what I'm saying is, I think this is a problem down the road. Like, I don't know if he's necessarily playing more minutes than the 28 he played last night, or maybe he gets to 30 last night. I don't know if he's played in 30 in a game yet this year, but they're going to need him when it matters. I don't think so. Man. He hasn't played a ton of minutes.
I think he's,
I think that's they're going to
cap.
Might be. I know his minutes are sitting in the mid to high 20s, but they're going to need him to play in the mid to high 30s in the playoffs, and he's got to be better with his fouls then. That's the only pushback I was having.
Look, it was an out of bounds play, and Dante DiVincenzo threw a great pass back to a back cut.
Rough play from Zaire Williams there.
Zaire Williams fell asleep. He didn't.
Jackson's played over 30 minutes 5 times this year.
Okay.
Yeah.
Bond Timbs.
Zaire Williams, I'm sure, was more worried about Jordan.
34 Clarkson times, 33 minute once. So
anyway, Zaire Williams fell asleep on a back cut. It happens. I'm not sure that if Steven Adams or Jaren Jackson were in the game that it would have mattered, because it was sort of direct play. But not having a basket.
What about defense, if Danny Green's in the game?
Okay. Well not having a basket defender. Not having a basket defender is an issue for Memphis right now. They've lost 4 in a row. They're on a 5-game West Coast trip. Ja missed one of the games with an ankle injury. Post game, not surprising, the Grizzlies are maybe the most confident team in the league, except outside the Warriors, but they certainly talk they're the most confident team in the league. And so, of course, they shrug their shoulders and say, no big deal. But it is worth pointing out that this team that's been, the only team they were worried about in the West was who'd they say?
Nobody. The only team they're worried about in the league is Boston.
Oh, Boston.
They're fine in the West. They're fine in the West.
Right. That was it. I knew there was one team he said they were just fine with, or they were not just fine with.
I was going to say, if they're going to be fine in the West, they better get the number one seed, because they're 20-3 at home, best home record in the league. They're 3 games under 500 on the road. So home court advantage matters. And to get home court advantage, they might have to mix in the occasional road win, which they've yet to do with 1 game remaining on a 5-game road trip.
Well, and by the way, the other thing that's interesting too, you mentioned Steven Adams being out. I really like Brandon Clark in the starting lineup for them. I think this could be their go-to lineup in the playoffs when things really matter. They could switch a lot more with that lineup. You have Jaren then playing the 5. There's probably going to be matchups for Steven Adams. While he's a great offensive rebounder and can, is become a better rim protector, he's going to have some issues on the perimeter guarding people. I will be curious. I think this could be a good stretch for them to kind of run this lineup out there and see how it goes. It was really effective in this game. But yeah, like, you know, Memphis loves to talk and they're fun. But if you're going to talk, you got to win some games. And this has been a bit of a rough patch. And it's also allowed Denver to start to really get some distance. And, it's starting to look like they're, barring something crazy, they're going to be the one seed.
Yeah, Denver has given Jokic a couple of games off recently with a couple of nagging little injuries. Right now he's dealing with a little hamstring. He sat Wednesday night in Milwaukee. They kind of spiked that one. It was the second night of a back-to-back. They spiked that one. But they had just won 9 in a row or something like that. No, it was
11. There's been a lot of load management talk, and understandably so. But if we're having New Orleans, Milwaukee back-to-backs for teams, the league can't be doing stuff like that. I mean, come on. That's just going to be an automatic sit.
Not only is it a 3-hour flight, but it's a 3-hour flight plus losing an hour in a time change. That's a big factor. When you look at back to backs, when you go east.
They're both in the central time zone.
I'm sorry.
Brian can't even get his own time zone right.
I know. I'm in the central time zone. For some reason, I thought, I messed it up. Anyway, it was a long trip, and they said everybody and the fans in Milwaukee didn't get to see the 2-time MVP. They just got to watch the 2-time MVP. I don't know if
they were just happy to see Giannis and Chris Middleton on the court together. Finally.
That's right.
That's what they're happy to see.
That's right. But Denver has opened a little bit of breathing room between them and the Grizzlies. It'll be interesting to see if the Grizzlies attempt to do anything at the deadline. Their deadline acquisition is Danny Green, who's coming back in. Is it not? So he had the injury.
February 1st.
It's like an eight month turnaround, which him and Joe Ingles have both been really quick to come back off of these ACLs. And
I talked with Danny about it in December. He came to the set of NBA Today and I talked to him.
Yeah, you tried to trade him.
I just informed him that if Memphis makes a trade, that it could be him. He already knew that. So it's not like I told him anything he didn't know. Although I think he's expecting to be there. So he wants to re-sign there, honestly. He didn't just tear his ACL. He also tore another ligament. So it was even I don't remember which one it was. But it was even a more significant recovery. He was very optimistic. He doesn't need to play well in February. He needs to be ready in the spring. So they could look at him as their sort of midseason acquisition. I don't know what you're going to get there. You're certainly not going to know. I mean, they've watched him in practice. They may have a feel for him, but like Ingles didn't play well, hasn't really played well in general. He's had a few good moments. Ricky Rubio has come back after 11 months or so with the Cavs, and he's played for a couple of weeks. He's still not playing very many minutes and he is not looking good, but that again, the Cavs need him for later. They don't need him now. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. Memphis is one of these teams. They have all of their assets. They have all their picks. They have, a lot of flexibility.
Well, they also have the Warriors 2024 pick going all the way back to the Andre Iguodala. Never stepped foot in Memphis deal.
That's right. So they can do something. I don't know if there's something to do.
The question. And I don't think they do something unless it is a significant needle mover. I think we've talked, I know I've talked about OJ and Anunoby. Like if you
OJ,
what about
OG? I said you do
for OJ and Anunoby, you can get for a protected second. OG might
be DOG. I said OG, didn't I? Anyway,
it's all fun and games.
We're just having a good time.
If you get me up in the morning, you teach me a new vocabulary word, I might botch something. Anyways, you plug a guy like that in, I think that's something that they'd have to look at. Of course, if OG is on the block, then the bidding will probably get pretty steep.
Yeah. I have not heard that he's on the block. I said that on the last podcast. I know people are trying to get him on the block, but I don't know if he is. But I think Memphis will be fine. I think it's a bigger question about whether Memphis is in position to, if they're strong enough to win three playoff series. They obviously believe that they are, and they might be, but it's a question.
I'm still picking, as of now, the team that beat them last night to win three playoff series in the West until proven otherwise.
Interesting.
Assuming health, assuming their guys are all available, I'm picking them.
By the way, the Vegas odds, they do have the Nuggets as the favorites in the West. And, well, I'm looking at overall title odds, but among overall title odds, they have the Nuggets as the top team in the West, plus 800. The Warriors are second at plus 850. So, you know, they're like Vegas agrees with you. And but you know what? I'll say this. Same thing I said about the Grizzlies, like home court advantage matters. what are we looking at? 6-18 on the road for the Warriors.
With the road issues are certainly a problem. By the way, we got to do trivia.
Oh, yes.
Trivia.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Now it's time for a Hoop Collective trivia.
This is the other one that I teased last week from the great Stats Williams. In conjunction with LeBron going for the all-time scoring record. There are seven players who played against both Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and LeBron James. Who are they?
Boy, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy. That's a tough one. Michael Jordan, no.
Incorrect. He came back that last year before.
This is a tough one. Jeez, oh, geez. We at least got to get a few here, Wendy. We're not going to get them all. We got to get a few.
I'm hoping I'll give you guys some hints as we go along. I'm seeing if you can get one or two first.
Let me just. Oh boy,
A couple of these are easy. A lot of them are hard.
Reggie Miller
is one of the easy ones.
Okay, Reggie Miller. Trying to think of old farts in that
guys in the late 80s is what you
guys who about. Started in the 80s and retired in the early 2000s.
All right, I'm gonna get some assistance here, and I'm gonna go scroll through like the 88 NBA draft. Maybe that's a decent way to try to cheat here.
Well, I'll give you some.
This is not
you guys
helpful.
Have. You guys have. I'll give you some hints. So one of these guys, two of these guys are former head coaches in the NBA.
Byron Scott.
Not Byron Scott. He was coaching in the early 2000s.
I know, but he played with Kobe. He played with Kobe. That I was trying to remember.
Yeah, we're not talking about Kobe, boss.
He didn't say you were you.
I'm just saying he was coaching the finals then.
That's right. He was. You're right.
One of them is a coworker of ours who was a former head coach. Bobby Marks. What?
I'm making a joke.
A coworker of ours.
Could actually.
I'm not good at trivia. I'm just.
Oh, this is a rough stretch. By the way, Steve Kerr just missed playing against LeBron.
There, I will tell you. So I was going through this trying to guess these answers when Stats gave me the question. I probably guessed 20 guys that either missed by like a couple games. There are also several guys who played in LeBron's rookie year but didn't play in a game against him. One of those is Karl Malone, was in the league, didn't play against the Cavs.
I remember
he didn't
that.
Count.
Yeah.
So there's a few guys like that. So Mark Jackson is the guy I was referring to before.
What year did Gary Payton come in?
Guy looked up Gary Payton. He came in the year after. So he just missed.
Alonzo Mourning.
Mark Jackson would not consider himself a colleague of ours.
sure he would. Sure he would.
Of course he is.
Another one is a guy who coached in your town, McMahon.
Avery
Johnson. He snuck in.
Indirectly was responsible for my original banning from by Mark.
That's right. One of them is the close relative of a guy we talked about, or a close family friend of a guy we talked about earlier on the pod.
I mean, that's a ridiculous
Rod Strickland.
Rod, I thought it would
How
get
about
that?
How Strickland. About that? Come on, baby.
let's see who else. Another one is a guy who won 3 championships with the Bulls, then went on to win, I believe, at least one other one, played in the finals with the Magic.
Horace Grant.
Another one is the guy I think played
that long. That's impressive.
Yep. Another one is a guy I think who played longer than any player in the one of the longest playing players in the league was with the Hawks for a long time.
Kevin Willis. I wouldn't have thought that Kevin Willis played with LeBron.
Former Maverick Kevin Willis. He played for the Mavericks when he was like my age.
Bro, Kevin Willis played forever. Kevin Willis's last year in the league was 2006-07.
Was that with the Mavericks? God.
Jim What's Jackson.
That? Yeah, with the Mavericks. That's right.
Yeah.
No, Jim Jackson is not an answer. The only the other guy left, I don't even know what guess to give you to get this one. I would have never got it. It was Olden Polynice was the other guy who played.
All right. Give me the list cleanly now, since we've made a mess of it.
Rod Strickland, Reggie Miller, Olden Polynice, Mark Jackson, Kevin Willis, Horace Grant, and Avery Johnson. That's the 7 guys.
Man.
Played against Kareem and LeBron.
Good one.
That was a good one from Stats.
That was a good one. On that note.
Not our finest performance there, Wendy.
That was a Hall of Fame. I mean, Brian's not even attempting, but that's a Hall of Fame.
I got one.
Trivia question.
I got one.
Who'd you get?
Horace Grant.
McMahon's the only one who got one. We got Reggie. Miller. The rest of them had to be.
If I had thought for 10 minutes, I could have gotten Reggie. All right. Get to your flight, gentlemen. Safe travels. Thank you for listening to Hoop Collective Podcast. We will talk to you next week. Take care.
Adios, amigos.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.